You're listening to Sports Tech Feed, the global sports technology podcast.
Hello and welcome to Sports Tech Feed, the global sports technology podcast. I'm your host, Thomas Lomes, and it's great to have you join us again this week. On today's show, we have the first of many sessions recorded at the inaugural Sports Innovation Summit, held last month in Nashville, Tennessee, at Neesan Stadium, home of the Tennessee Titans. The summit is a joint venture between the team here at STWS and our friends at HTX Sports Tech. The summit is a forum for exploring the most pressing issues facing the sports industry today, from the latest technological advancements to new ways to engage fans. And as you'll hear, the summit covers a wide range of topics with a focus on meaningful and actionable insights. Dates and locations for the 2024 edition of the summit will be released soon, so make sure you subscribe to our Sports Tech Feed newsletter via the link in the show description or at stws.co. For our Asia Pacific based listeners, we encourage you to attend the Australia Sports Tech Conference, the Southern Hemisphere's largest and most respected sports technology industry event. This year's edition is happening on Thursday, August 31st in Brisbane, Queensland. Agenda, tickets and more information is also available at stws.co. Now over to our expert guests on data-driven decision-making at the Sports Innovation Summit.
I'm really excited for this session. In terms of what we could cover, what we will cover, I've got my questions. I'm going to run through them. But then I really want questions from the audience, because in terms of data-driven decision-making in sports, with one person out of sports, but that's we'll cover that in a minute. There's so much we can cover. It's such an important thing. I don't think I need to overstate how important data or data, depending where you're from, is for any modern organization. But really, we're going to unpack that. We've got our great guests. We have Tari White, Director of Business Strategy and Analytics with the Nashville Predators.
Morning.
Rachel
Goodger.
Rachel Goodger, there CRO, FanCam, and CradRQ, and Michael Farris, Senior Director of Business Strategy and Insights at the Country Music Association. That's a mouthful. That is quite a lot, yeah. So, first of all, just a quick, very brief kind of what are you responsible for, what are you focusing on, and then we'll dive into some questions.
Yeah, I'm up first. So, yeah, Tyree White again, over at the Nashville Predators. So our group, Business Strategy and Analytics, we service a number of different revenue generation departments in the organization. So all things ticket sales and service, partnership sales and service, marketing, and finance as well. So we touch on all those verticals. We spend a few time here and there. We dabble in food and beverage and then merchandise as well, as it pertains to just fan data and capturing all together for a nice fan profile.
Rachel Goodger, FanCam and CrowdIQ. Technically, we're just CrowdIQ now, but used to be FanCam, and that's been enveloped by CrowdIQ. We are still relatively small, about 15, 16 people now, so title is CRO, but you know, you can make them up at this point. Sales, marketing, everything that has to do with biz dev, your PR, throw some graphic design in there, you know, wear a lot of hats, but we tackle fan engagement and then crowd analytics.
I like to make up titles as well as like very ambiguous ones, which is my title. So I'm with the Country Music Association, and my role is really focused on ticketing. I oversee all of our ticketed events, which we fill Neesan Stadium 4 nights a year during CMA Fest, and we do about 90,000 total across the river through multiple stages on both sides. We also have the awards. The heart of our event, or kind of like what we do at CMA, is we're a membership association. So we're a trade association for country music. We represent a broad set of categories within the industry. And so that's my other piece of my job, is I focus a lot on our first party data initiatives, as well as things that we're doing to advance the industry in terms of analytics and reporting and insights on where we're going, and kind of be the view in the data space for country music.
Fantastic. So lots of parallels with sporting organizations, in the sense of you have a membership base, you have that you engage with throughout the year, and then you have your tentpole events, your flagship events as well. So, and you mentioned first party data, so that's ticked off my bingo card. I've got a few that I'm going to go down, but that's good to start with. And Tyree, how do you go about building a robust data ecosystem? So really kind of looking nuts and bolts, the way that I think of it is people, processes, platforms. How do you, I guess, conceptualize it, and then how do you make sure that each element is put together before you can then go and actually action anything?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think you answered it and kind of said it in the perfect emotional intelligent way. People process platforms. But I do believe that it has to be evaluated to where you are, right? And I think, you know, when I started here with the Predators, we went out of whack of that process. So we went people, we evaluated the individuals that we had on our team, where we wanted to go, their skill set, and also what they wanted to do, right? And then we started to look at the process, and the processes and platforms that we had in place really weren't efficient. And I think to answer your question, it really comes down to efficiency. And that's where platforms come into play, and where we put platforms ahead of process and really changed our data infrastructure and really aggregating all of our data into one right now data warehouse. And that helps us, again, be more efficient, really be smart with our time and reporting. We have one daily report that we would do. And, you know, again, our team wanted to do so many things and wanted to develop in so many ways, but they were spending an hour a day on this one report. And so automating that report through our data warehouse and then pushing it through to Tableau has been a great efficiency gain for us. So now we're able to get deeper into the data and really get into analytics and starting to scrape and really look at, you know, where we should be from a projection wise based on previous years. How should we model our games going forward? So I really do think that, you know, it's dependent on where you are, where you put the people, process, and platforms. But I think people is going to be number one, and then it's all about efficiency.
And following on from that, what specific platforms do you use? Like, what do you, which team do you subscribe to in the world of business intelligence?
Yeah. So speaking about the data warehouse, right? We are core software clients. So core ingests our ticketing data from Ticketmaster, our CRM data. From Microsoft Dynamics, our email automation from Emma, which is a Nashville vendor as well. And then obviously, you know, Delaware North for merchandise and food and beverage right now. And so we're going to branch out and add more vendors to the data warehouse. Chief among them is going to be our app. Which we currently have a new app that launched a couple months ago through Yinscam. So getting that data in as well. And again, just putting all the pieces together so that we have a great fan profile, not only for marketing purposes, but also for our season ticket sales and service and retention teams as well.
Great. Well, we'll kind of circle back to that in a minute. But Rachel, so there's so much fan information data that you can capture. How do you decide what's valuable, I guess? And also then how do you actually go about doing that? And probably a point to talk about specifically what is the CrowdIQ product?
Yeah, that's a great question. So a lot of different ways, obviously, to collect data, and it's ever expanding. In our world, we are using high-resolution images, and that's where we come from. FanCam was this gigapixel photography platform. Fans could zoom in, find themselves in the crowd, really get selfie level at a lot of sporting events and concerts and things like that. And as we continue to capture more and more events and start actually installing cameras in venues, we started to notice that, well, we can capture not just tentpole events, we can capture every event every 15 minutes, sometimes every single second. And now we have high-resolution images of every fan in the crowd. So from our perspective, what we're looking at is those photos. And the rule of thumb is kind of anything you and I can deduce from an image, the computer can be trained to detect. So we're not doing any facial recognition, can't tell you exactly who anybody is, but how many kids are in the crowd, the male-female ratio, when are fans in their seats, how many fans are in their seats in those 15-minute intervals, and then even where are fans looking on a per-second basis. Are they staring at their phones? Are they paying attention to what's on the big screen? Are they looking at what's on the ice? And we've really leaned on the client for that. The cool thing is once you've captured photos, you can always go back retroactively and look at new data sets. You want to know how many fans have glasses on so that you can go to an eyewear partner? We had a client ask that. How many men have beards as they pitch their shaving partner? We can go and do that. So random ad hoc requests like that can be tackled. But all of the different data sets that we have delivered are because a client has asked. Our attention tracking was because back in 2019, the Vikings said, can you do this? We're rolling out sentiment analysis with a team here this year that should be announced shortly, where we'll basically be looking at not just one area of the stadium, but five different areas of the stadium, thousands of fans in real time, and seeing, are they happy, are they sad, are they mad, and how does that relate to what's going on in the venue? So from our perspective, it really just depends on, honestly, what the client wants. We haven't said no yet, which always keeps us on our toes.
Great. And so to reiterate, that's not like taking a photo of a fan and then putting it in a database and saying, hey, Rachel's sitting here and she's looking at her phone at this point and that. It's just looking at it as a, I guess, an amoeba, an organism, and seeing how that all kind of flows without saving particular data about biometrics or anything.
Yeah, we look at the crowd as a whole. We can go down to seat level. We do seat map every venue, so every fan is tied back to a seat. So if you want to look at sections, levels, price points, season ticket packages, and things like that, we can break that out. But basically right now we're utilizing AWS software. We've got 50 manual validators on our team that help train some algorithms as well. But let's say it's a 30-year-old female in the crowd. The result we're going to get back is the system's 95% confident this is a female. She's between the ages of 27 and 34. We're going to take the middle of that. She is wearing a Navy Preds jersey. We get, you know, that granular as well. So those are kind of the data points that we're hitting. So we can go seat level, but really we like to focus, you know, even on section and stadium level. What we've seen with a lot of teams is they often don't even know necessarily exactly who's in the venue. You know the information about the ticket buyer, but what about the other 50, 60% of fans? And we're bridging that gap.
Are you guys available next June?
We'll see you at CMA Fest. Tickets come with that too, right?
I mean, we don't even know the how many people are at our daytime stages, you know? So it's like, yeah. So that's a fun one. That's cool.
There you go. Deals are done.
I was going to say, it'd also be great if you could see how many people have catfish under their jersey.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, I think that would probably be encouraged, though. So,
yeah, right. You think you can walk through and scan any weapons on anybody, but you guys can't detect the catfish yet?
Yeah, no. That just seems to get through somehow. I don't know.
Gross.
That might be the first no. We might need a scent detection for that one, and so far photographs aren't working there.
But also that you can understand, all right, how many jerseys or things like that. Is that correct? You can say, you know, apparel, like how many, you know, branded things are people wearing?
Yeah, down to if you want to know what Gen Z female fans are wearing. Are they in T-shirts, polos, sweatshirts, bucket hats? What jersey is most popular? Anything like that. It really is, if you and I can see a photo of it, we can train the, can detect it in the photo, we can train the computer. So we've got some teams that we're getting granular with, you know, age buckets, male, female, and then popularity, not just on jersey, but are they in, what color T-shirt do they wear, sweatshirts, giveaway items, how many fans put on the hat that, or the scarf that was given away at the door, and then how often is it worn back throughout the season? So data like that as well.
Fascinating. So, Michael, you mentioned that that's a challenge that you have, is understanding at these big outdoor events is how many people are there. You can say how many people bought tickets, but at what point is and you can say this many people scanned and walked through the door, but, you know, if they leave, if they stay, if they're actually at the stage, if they're sitting at the bar, all that kind of information. So that's something that I guess is a challenge and a struggle there. Looking kind of positively, what's something that sports can learn from outside industries? And having your previous background, so I might mention, Michael did work in sports before this with Aspire. But what's something that sports is just out there ahead crushing it, and what's something they can learn from adjacent industries?
It might be best to like back up for people that may not be aware of the music industry. Like, I've only been in for 5 years, so I'll proudly say I'm still learning it. And there's a lot of things that are still unknowns, and a lot of my role is asking those questions and working with our board on what matters from a data and insights piece. But one of the things that's really fascinating about music is data is really important, right? And it's very central to a lot of conversations. The charts matter, and you have a lot of digital first companies now, like a Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, et cetera, who have a ton of metrics that they can push down at the consumer level and then start to actually do things like, you know, beats analysis or tone of the music, and then all these great algorithms. I think one of the big challenges, though, in music is it's not a centralized model for the artist, right? And so in a lot of cases, the thing that kind of is really intriguing to me is the artist is usually the one that doesn't have most of the information, And so that's kept right at the digital streaming partner, or if the label is collecting data, that's kept through them. And if data is being collected through the venues and the ticket providers, that's not often going back to the artists. And so you look at, there's really not a great 360 degree view of a fan, right, in music. I think it's a very challenging piece, and there's very few artists that can really take control of that. Garth Brooks can, you know, because they have a direct deal with a ticket platform. And Garth Brooks has his own media company, right? And so you go to scale, how do you do that? But a lot of these emerging acts who really need that data the most from a growth element, it's a struggle to get that and start to connect that view. And I think that's where sports undoubtedly gets it right, is that the 360 degree fan piece has been a very common piece of the vernacular for a good, you know, 6 to 8 years in a very intentional way, because venues are being built with first party data in mind. And things like, Tyree, you're talking about with going to Delaware North, that wasn't a piece of the conversation even 5 to 6 years ago, and it wasn't commonplace, right? It was happening, but it wasn't always there. And so now you're building venues like what Nashville SC did, and data is a piece of that. How do we fully get it back? How do we know everything that's happening with that fan? And music is not there for that. You know, we have a lot of our labels and partners in the space that kind of salivate at our first party data, you know, and I'm like, you guys have massive artists, like you guys should have, and they get very limited things. They might have an email, right? And so you're going to start to see a lot more of them, I think about how do we collect first party, how do we build our digital assets in the right way. But on the second piece, I think what music does really well is there is just a lot of buy-in on data and insights. It's just most often in the aggregate space. And that's probably where sport sometimes is a little bit, you know, maybe more talk than action. There's a lot of buzzwords around like data and, well, we got to do the research. And then it, you know, sits on the desk. It's not something that's constantly in, you know, the executive rooms. And I speak to a lot of people like Tyree and I, we have a group in Nashville where we meet with Nashville SC and the Titans, and we have this data team. And we talk a lot about the challenges of like getting in front of our executives. Like how do we convince them of the investments? And I think in the music space, that's there because it matters to see that aggregate data. So they're investing in their insights team. They're investing in the right ways to get data in to inform decisions. And so that's something that's really exciting to work in music, is it's not as challenging to talk about why we should do the data investment piece. You got to show the results, but it's there and it's commonplace. Like our CEO can talk to you about our project. And I don't think that's often the case, even at a lot of pro teams. So that's exciting.
Yeah, fascinating. So it seems that it's, I guess, a fluency in data and knowing that changes will be made in terms of the industry is following trends, all that kind of stuff, is that constant feedback that will direct where decisions are made, what the next album's going to be, what the next single's going to be, where they're going to tour, how they're going to do it, all that kind of stuff. Whereas from what I'm hearing, and it'd be interesting to get Tyree's thoughts on that, is sports can sometimes talk that, but then actually embodying that, it's the way that I've heard it is sports teams can sometimes be like banks. They just make money by opening their doors. And if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So in terms of that model, but then there's the teams that actually get it right and the teams that are actually investing in this and seeing the future as well, then there's so much more value that you can add to grow your fan base, grow how much you can monetize them, but in a way that they're getting value back in return. So, Tari, so a comment on those thoughts.
Yeah, I think you're spot on, and both of you are. And I'll take you back, and I think to your point, in 2009, I remember interning with the Carolina Panthers, and I think you were right, every team in every sport was operating as if, hey, we open the door, fans are going to come, we send our season ticket invoice, we're going to renew at 90% to 99%, it's going to happen. And then life happened and we all kind of figured out, wait, you know, our fans really have lives outside of us. And so it then became, okay, how do we build relationships with our fans? And then the relationships turned, okay, how do we turn that into revenue? And then how do we retain that revenue? And then the core piece of that triple R became CRM, right? And you start to, that's where teams would say, okay, we need a CRM, we need a CRM. They didn't know what they wanted to do or, you know, what they just knew that, hey, we needed to capture data somewhere. And so I think it really has transitioned to, you know, we need this to a bifurcation of teams where, you get teams that, you know, just want to operate the way we've always operate, and you get teams who are challenged more from the top up, you know, top down, I'm sorry, to really push the envelope, right? And I think you look at teams, I worked for 2 years with the Sacramento Kings with Vivek Ranadive as owner, who was very tech-driven, but not only that, always wanted to be first, right? And I think part of the pitch for the All-Star game that Sacramento did when I was there was about, you know, self-driving cars, you know, taking, you know, at the time the commissioner from the airport to, you know, Golden One Center and the like, right? And it's really pushing that thinking. Did we ever do it? No. But, you know, it's really pushing the thinking, because then what happened? Every single day we'd sit in ticket sales meeting and say, okay, what innovative thing can we add to our sales process to make us more efficient, as we mentioned earlier, and to obviously sell more tickets and push revenue, but how could we, you know, make our sales teams more efficient in their day-to-day? And like I said, it really has become, it's really been great to see sort of, again, that bifurcation of teams that still want to keep things the way they've always done it and think the season ticket model is never going to be broken, and then teams who really push the envelope.
I've got a question, follow-up for you on that. You mentioned when everybody kind of jumped on board, we need a CRM, we need X, Y, and Z. I am, you know, of the thought you can never have too much data, but do you ever find yourself, or have you in the past, thinking we have too much data right now, it's not centralized somewhere, and what do we do with it at this point?
Yeah, I think I've had moments where I question data integration, right? And at the time, I think it's really, I can think of one example where one of the teams, I'll keep them out of this one, we wanted to ingest incidents at the stadium, right? And it wasn't tying to any individual. And, you know, if it was, then it would make more sense, right? And really being able to track CRM cases and how often incidents occur and how does that impact your season ticket renewal rate, depending on how quickly we resolve the issue. It was just logging the actual incident itself. And I saw no value in spending $5,000 to $10,000 for an integration that was going to yield us 250 incidents per game, and we not be able to. And I think the biggest point of it is take action on it, right? And I think if we're not going to call out an immediate action, I'd say within that team, and you'll probably be able to figure out, but within, you know, a week after that game, then we aren't really using the data, and it's not being valuable for us, and we're just collecting data just to be data centric.
Well, like a key piece of that puzzle, though, is just like transparency. And I guess like knocking down this perspective of like data teams and like, oh, they're a data person. I'm not a data person. I'm not going to get this. And like, you know, we got the ability at CMA when I joined to build this, right? They had all the first party data lived all over the place. Nothing was centralized. Everybody was managing their own stuff. There may have been data kept that shouldn't have been kept in certain ways. You know, it was really kind of wild, wild west. And we went through a very long journey. It was about a 14-month process of just talking to people about what data was there, how are we going to use it? Okay, now that it's there, let's make sure everybody knows where it's at, who's using it for what. Oh, that's not the best purpose. How do we then circumvent this? And like those conversations don't often happen, right? And so then you get this mystique of like, oh, well, I'll just let the data team do it. And then we have data overload, and it's like, but how are you actually using it, right? So I think that's that buzzword mentality, right? It's like, okay, we've built it, we can check it off, but is it really integrated into the culture? Are we really talking about it enough? Are we really empowering others to speak on behalf of data and how we can use it? And that's your point, is like, what's useful, what's not, and what's the outcome?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. And we talk a lot on our team about democratizing data, right? And, you know, we want to develop a great data infrastructure, but we also want to democratize data because of exactly your point, right? Like, it just becomes, well, what are we doing? We're just pushing out reports. Are we really helping you in your day-to-day if you're not able to access, you know, the numbers and the data that you need across the organization, and not being, you know, a best of service, you know, to the organization and other verticals that we support?
And so to bring it back to the people part of the three Ps, is that then training people within the organization? Hey, go do it yourself. Go look it up. Like, we're not just gonna spit it out. Is that the next evolution? Is that you, and also where platforms come in terms of someone being able to actually access that and not having to know how to use Python or something, if they're like, you know, or even advanced Excel. But someone on, say, a sales side, sponsorship, whatever, is just giving them what they want.
Yeah, it is that piece of how do we build that culture of transition. And really, everywhere I've gone, it's been change management, right? And that change management would look different in different organizations, like I said, depending on where we are and on the data maturity model. But yeah, you really do have to bring some sort of change management piece that says, here's our current process, here's why it's inefficient, here's the new process, here's how it still mirrors everything we were doing previously and adds value to your day-to-day currently. So.
Yeah. I think some of it is like, it's not having a 2, 3, 4, 10 person data team. Yeah. Everyone in the organization is a part of this data team. And you know, one thing at CMA is we have an artifact to enforce that. Every week, we have a data collaborative team that's marketing, membership. We have members from ticketing. All of our actual tech and IT team is fully involved. And everybody's aware of where we stand with where we are in the projects. They know our speed bumps. They know where we're having success. They're able to input. They're able to ask questions. And so, and it's also one thing to say, like, be aware of where data's coming in. And like, if we don't know who's collecting data somewhere in the organization, we can't do anything with it, right? And so I think there is a piece where within that, it's trying to expand the definition of the people piece of this as much as we can. And try to, I try not to say data a lot. We just talk about like what we're doing, right? And it's just a way that we are doing it.
See, and that's amazing to hear, because I think for the last panel, there was a question, what's your pain point or something in sports? What's one word? And I said siloed, because that's what we see sometimes on a daily basis. We had a MLB team and we were talking to them about your average age is 35, not 47, blah, blah, blah. And somebody goes, so how do we get on their sponsorship team goes, so how do we get that data? When do we start getting it? And we go, no, we've been working with you guys for a couple of years now. This is what the data is. And they go, we just lost a multi-million dollar cellular sponsor because they said we were too old. And if we had just shown them this number, we would have kept them. And I said, well, your data team has had this for 2, 3 years. We've never seen it. And that still blows my mind to this day, because I think the silo of when people think data analytics, they think three people huddled up in a room sitting there on their computers figuring stuff out that's not shared. And sometimes that is true. And I think sports could learn something from what you guys are doing and having these larger discussions, because it's amazing, I think, when other departments learn that this stuff is even available to them to see what they can do internally.
And that preempts my next question, which is around revenue generation and monetization, because I think that's something that in this data conversation, especially data for the sake of it, is like, well, we can collect it. We're just going to collect it because we can. It's just going to sit there, and like I can tell you some fun facts about everyone that's in your stadium or on your database, whatever it is. But then driving it back to, okay, how does this save us money, save us time, or how does it make us money? Is that I guess continuing on, Rachel? Is that something that in these conversations you're giving that to the teams as well? Like, is that something they don't know what they don't know in terms of how they can really realize value from this?
Yeah, I think a bit. I think the hard thing is adapting teams to do something new, especially when you're working with, you know, sponsorships, for example, and the data that they're providing their partners and the brands they're working with, because they've been providing the same thing for 10, 15, 20 years. You know, what was our engagement rate? Well, there were 20,000 people in the venue today. So there was 20,000 people. It wasn't. So how do you go to them though, all of a sudden, say maybe it was 4,000? But still convince them that's good, because you're changing their perception of what good is. And so I think that's something that we've been battling with. It's anytime you have new data, new technologies, is kind of reframing the mindset of what's good, what's bad, and how you move forward with certain things. But one example is just with the attention tracking. I have these conversations with sponsorship who say they charge the same for whatever the advertisement is happening, the activation on the scoreboard, and it just goes by time. So a 15-second spot in between the first and second period, and you guys could definitely do it differently, but it might be you know, here's the X rate. Well, a 15-second spot in the middle of the second period that has 90% of fans paying attention to it is also the same rate. You should be charging more for that. You should be making more for that. And you don't have to change your bottom line. But if you change some things, you can make a lot more money. But it's change, and nobody's comfortable with change.
Change is scary. Change is scary. But that, yeah, that point, you know, just after a power play, how can you create assets or essentially dynamic pricing that, and maybe is that as well when you're, I guess, internally championing this, is it using those terms that are understood? Like if you said to a ticketing person, dynamic pricing, they would get that. It's like, well, this is dynamic sponsorship.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we've been trying to do is get teams to dynamically price in-venue assets. And we're working with a couple of teams that now have enough data to say we can do that. We have the numbers to show what assets are most valuable when the best time is to play things. And again, you don't have to change the bottom line, but 15 seconds could be worth significantly more than 5 minutes of time across the entire game. So we'll see how it goes in the future and how things continue to change. But I think being willing to change is the very first step. And in sports, that's difficult.
Yes.
Well, good note to end those questions on. Questions from the audience. And I'm going to run around so we can get on the podcast.
Yeah, this is for Michael and Tyree. How do you internally identify less as an information source and more as an agent of change for departments to actually enact the data that you have? Because you're sitting on a gold mine, as Rachel has identified. Yeah. How do you construct buy-in for the position you have, influence change?
Ooh, I love that. So we do it in a couple ways. One is we actually, our data team lives within a broader business strategy operations team. So actually live events is on my team, which is a weird piece. And so it's also bringing anybody in that may not think data matters and starting to expose them on why it could relate. But we set up structure, right? So we have data advisory group, which is our senior executive team. We try to meet quarterly with them. And so there's also, like, going back to the transparency, how do we create artifacts in the organization that are standard touch points so people know what we're doing? And then the other piece is when we're talking about data, we're talking about information, we usually are hosting like workshops or like process evaluations. And so we just sit in a room and ask a bunch of questions and get people talking and then go, oh, what about this? What about this? And then we bring them for the journey, right? So we're actually building a fully custom CRM through a really small vendor out in Maryland. And we just started with our foundation team, and bare bones, our foundation lead is on those calls. So you're building it with us. You're like in this team. You should see everything that's going on. And if you feel empowered by that, then we're going to win. So it's almost like we don't have to be the center, trying to make the team feel like they're driving it, and we're just helping facilitate where they're going.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I think for us, it is about structure as well. So we've got a number of individuals that support the specific verticals, sponsorship, ticket sales and service, marketing. And so they're in those meetings. And really what they're doing is figuring out where we are in the sales or service cycle as an organization or for that vertical. And then coming back and really asking, you know, what can we do to help advance, right? And it then becomes, for us, an opportunity to say, well, did you know X, Y, and Z? And then the did you know to say sponsorship now becomes OIC. And then you turn the OIC into we could do this again, or we could do this, you know, automatically. We could get you these reports more often, once a week, if it'll help, right? And I think it really having those individuals be in the meeting and really listening to what's going on. Okay, we're getting ready to sell, I don't know, quarter plans or half season ticket plans. Well, who are our unrenewed full season ticket holders, and what were their objections, right? And how can we target the right objection that says, hey, I just had too many games last year, to now quickly pull those lists of fans for our service reps, right? And it sounds simple, and it is simple. It's just, people really overlook the simple nature of what we're able to do. And just, I think, simplicity and efficiency go hand in hand. And I really think that that's where we sort of have an advantage.
And efficiency, I think, is the big thing. I laugh because I'll be talking to a team and they'll say, okay, we're going to set up three calls. We're going to have a ticketing call, a partnerships call, and then a data analytics call. I'm like, this might be crazy, but do you mind putting it on one call? I'm happy to fly there and have three separate meetings, but I think everybody could learn something if we have the call together, believe it or not. And it is amazing when we have that conversation, though, to watch like light bulbs go off and things that different departments never even thought about. But you get in a room for 30 minutes, even quarterly, magic can happen.
Yeah, or even processes they don't know. We actually just did this yesterday with how we hire temps in a 2-hour. And there were people that hire hundreds of temps for a festival. They're like, oh, I didn't know that was a part of the process. I was like, they've been doing it for years. And right, it's because nobody's been in the room together. Mm-hmm. And so if we can facilitate that, that's also empowering data, that's empowering strategy, and it works.
Hi, I have a kind of practical question for the two of you and then a follow-up. So how do you approach your budgets for the SaaS tools you use, the different products you're choosing on a yearly basis? And then, Rachel, how are you hearing them, those type of people, talk about their budgets?
I'd like to be enlightened on this too, yes.
I want them to answer first and then you to sort of say, like, when you hear that, what is your response as a company for comeback?
You want to take this one first?
We're getting pitched after this, I think.
Yeah.
CMA is fun because we have more board members than we have staff members. So we have, you know, 70 of the top leaders in the country music industry. They get to approve our budgets. And they're all experts in their field. And so we have to be very meticulous with how we go about it. You know, we built this first part of data thing from scratch. And so one of the ways to do that is I could have gone into a room and wrote down a number and it could have been really valid and nobody would have believed me. So we went and hired the uncle and we went and talked to consultants and they validate this number. And so we've done a great job of like bringing in experts. We've validated kind of where budget ranges can go. And then we set budgets, we get people to buy in, we overachieve those budgets by obviously doing more with less. And actually this past budget cycle, we had no questions at all about what we were doing. And so I think a lot of the way we're going after budgets is, what's our end goal next 12 months, next 5 years? Why is this tech going to help us get there? Who's involved? What's the outcome? And if we focus on those things and not necessarily what we're spending, we can get a lot farther. And then we can talk about how we get the expenditure to happen. With a board, we usually go through a lot of appropriation processes and like we can go and sometimes get the money. I'm saying this with the vendor here. She's going to give me a really high price now. But like we really put the use case out there more so than like, okay, our budget is X and we have to live within that because we're still building. I don't have a precise answer now because we're 2.5-3 years into it. And we got a lot of buy-in with where we are. And we're probably one of the largest expenditures, I think, probably in the company now.
Yeah, for us, I think it's a lot of like where, you know, it's based on the business objectives for that year, right? And I think, we tend to invest in those that, will help us achieve it. But I think also how we evaluate it is, can you help us achieve it efficiently, right? And so, subscription passes is something that we did in the past pre-COVID and are looking at currently. How do we get a monthly pass out to, a market like ours where we've got so much, transient fans that come in and out, single game tickets, but also don't want to commit to, say, something like a 10-game plan, right? And so what's the, back-end processes that we need to, what is it going to take from our time to invest from a manpower perspective? Again, like I said, what is the efficiency advantage of using the platform, and how can we not only hit the revenue goal, but hit the revenue goal faster than we would another platform?
And from our perspective, we're more of a licensing model right now, kind of an annual fee, looking at moving to a SaaS model or a DaaS model, I guess. But oftentimes it has been going to teams and saying, here's the price guide. And then teams come back and say, okay, we really want this. Our budget's half of that. How do we make it work? And we have and we do. And it's okay, what can we provide now? That's the cool thing about the data we're providing is, again, as soon as the photos are taken, you can always go back. Mm-hmm. So if a team just says, we just want attention tracking, we just want demographic data this year, no problem. You want merch analysis, you want Crowdflow, you want season ticket analysis, whatever we're providing 3 years down the line, we can go back and deliver it. We're not losing anything. So it gives us a lot of flexibility at the moment, but budgets are tough. And sports, the sales cycle is interesting because it's an entire year you can be talking to a team, and then they come to you and say, it didn't get passed in the budget. And sometimes that's out of your control, and oftentimes it is. And I think that's a really hard thing about working in sports, is there's something that you can see a lot of value in, something that you think is going to drive value, drive revenue, but at the end of the day, you might not have the final say in what gets passed through the budget. So it's something that on our side, we have to live with. And I know, you know, in your world too, you just have to live with.
Yeah, but what's the number? No, I'm kidding. I mean, that's what we want, right? No, I'm kidding. I'm curious to know, when you guys bring in a solution that seems like it's going to really kill, and then it fails, why it fails, and then what can the vendors do to better support you guys on the team side to make sure that it works?
I just went through this. This feels painful. I think the issue with SaaS is everybody's trying to fit everyone in a box. And ultimately, you can say everyone's the same, but there's nuances, right? And if a vendor isn't willing to accept the nuances and help create and think differently around those things, it's going to fail. And I would say, like, and this probably goes back to the budget question, every single vendor we work with is a full partner of ours. We love them. We feel like they're a part of our team. We, like, are very transparent with them. And, you know, there's a particular vendor we just went through this conversation with where they're like, well, we're a SaaS company. We're like, yes, we understand what that means, but this is what we need as your client or as your customer. And we're not going to fit into this template that you have set up for hundreds of your clients. We need this. And that took us 2.5 months to get through. And so, you know what, that wears us down. We really think about that vendor differently, and we're going to think about where our long-term plans are. Hopefully we have a great relationship with them. I think we will. But that's a challenge when I look at vendors. You know, that's why we went custom with CRM. We work with a lot of people that feel like they can be a part of us and they can build with us and willing to accept it.
So I would say, just for us, it's easy to say flexibility is key. We're small enough. We're working with 18 teams right now. We've been around since, FanCam's been around since 2010, but it's been 6 years for CrowdIQ. But we have the ability to, a team comes to us and says, actually, this is what we have. We go, great, we're going to work with you. What do you need? And we make it happen. It obviously becomes different when you are working with every team in all five, you know, major leagues, or you have hundreds or thousands of clients, and you can't sit down with somebody one-on-one for 3 days and work through it. Love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, that goes down to the idea of partnership, right? And I think really great partners anticipate. And I think through how we evaluated, you know, where we're going to go from a data warehouse perspective, and the vendor that I really wanted anticipated, or I should say partner, but not really a partner, but the vendor that I really wanted, that I felt really good about, really anticipated our needs, right? And they really looked at our business and said, oh, you don't just sell hockey tickets. You've got concerts. That's just Bridgestone Arena. But I also realized you have ice centers in three different areas. What does that look like? What does that data capture look like? And the other vendors that we were vetting didn't do that. And so now, to the budget question, because we didn't spend for the best vendor, we are now sort of backhanding, okay, how do we capture partnerships at Ford Ice Center in Bellevue? Or how do we, now that we have F&M Bank Arena under our umbrella, how does that look in our CRM versus a partnership that's logged in for the Preds? And so really getting ahead and anticipating and seeing the whole business is really when I feel comfortable that, okay, this company understands, and if they do that up front, I know that they're going to continue that throughout the partnership.
All right, so I had a question for Rachel. I was really curious at how robust the technology is when it comes to getting the answers from this data. Because I hope I don't sound like a broken record, but AI, you know, it's big these days. You know, I go to ChatGPT and I'm just like, hey, I'm looking for the answer for this, this, and that. And it's almost conversational. So whenever you're looking for answers for the people you're working with, do you go back to your team like, hey, this is what they need to get answered to make their decisions? Or is it like, hey, I can easily put in a question to this technology and it spits out the answers I'm looking for?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I love that you ask it, because in our world right now, I mean, it's a dashboard you're looking at. From our side, all of our partners are ingesting the data raw as well so that they can overlay it with other data sets, as we know how important that is. But we're playing around with, you know, ChatGPT and all of these different things, and it's pretty unbelievable not to replace you know, somebody, but we wouldn't need a consultant, for example, from our side. You could give the team the opportunity to go in and ask, okay, we changed this on this date. What was the result? And have it spit back the answer for you in something that takes maybe a data analyst 2 days to do. And it's something we're playing with right now. And it's incredible, I think, where it's going to be going. But all that comes back to how the data is structured. And if the data is not structured properly, then you can't ask those questions. So, obviously, we're all in a crowd business, but for us, we didn't have anything to do during COVID and during the pandemic because there were no crowds to capture. So we spent a year or two making sure the data was structured to the T, and then developing new processes. But the I think quick advancements in AI, at least, you know, publicly to what we've all seen in the last couple of months even, is going to be a game changer for us, not in coming years, but literally in coming weeks, months before the NFL season, the NHL season, the NBA season.
Awesome.
So that great question, and that kind of preempts what I was going to say, is we hear a lot about AI, and I think we're specifically talking about generative AI. How do you use it in your day-to-day? Or do you use it in your day-to-day? Because I think there's a lot of talk about how it could be used, but right, you know, taking the last week, 10 days, have you used AI? Yes or no? We'll roll along.
We personally have not. We have a vendor that accesses, they use artificial intelligence to sort of lead gen. We are not a part of the process. I've been in instances where we have been a part of the lead gen process on the AI front, but in the past, currently we are not. They give us the leads after they run their scripts and models and everything, and we get actual activity from a prospect, and then we take it from there. Usually they're setting the first appointment based on our scheduling of our sales reps, on the partnerships, ticket sales, group sales, verticals.
Every day on our side. Our CEO and co-founder, Tinas, we will get, it's probably twice a week, we get a message to the entire team. What did you use AI for today or yesterday? Are you having trouble solving a problem, literally even down to coding? Put it in and see what results you get. Is there a system that you can't figure out the answer for? Don't spend a week or two on literally Google trying to figure things out. Ask AI. And even in my day-to-day, I get asked all the time for use cases. What are use cases? What can this data be used for? It's amazing if I put in five sentences about a certain data set and here's what we're collecting, here's how we're collecting it, what could a professional hockey team do with this data, and the list of 15 things I get. And sometimes it's things that we're already doing and you already know, but sometimes it's things you never even thought about. So even just from like a brainstorming perspective, really every day.
AI is a tricky thing in music these days. So this is a fun conversation. I think from a day-to-day, from a data lens, it's not something overly prevalent at the moment with where we stand, but we have used it to help with coding and doing some reporting pieces, and we've wrote a few country songs with it as well. So, we're trying around. I think from a insights end and what we're doing on like analyzing music consumption, it is a really, like we're looking at it more from how is it impacting creative output than maybe using it to do work at the moment and understanding where that balance is.
I actually had another question. I don't think the mic, oh, there it goes. So I know you mentioned, really my question is, what is the disconnect between, and this is for Tari and Rachel, between an organization like yours really using the technology like fan cams and, you know, being able to make decisions like, hey, we should scale how much we're charging for, you know, this spot, 15-second spot, like you mentioned. I know you mentioned that change is scary, but it just has to be more than just change. Like, is it maybe political where some vendors will be kicked out, or like, it just seems like it has to be more than just change.
Can I throw my really quick thing in there?
Sure.
My experience over the last 6 or 7 years here with this is want to have versus need to have. Change is scary. and, you know, I think you said like 2009, looking at CRMs, there are teams that still aren't there and are building out very basic infrastructure still. And while I think what we're doing is incredibly valuable and it will continue to be valuable in the future, there's a difference between, you know, wants and needs right now. And some teams, I think, are still getting some basics under wrap.
Yeah, I totally agree, right? And I think, again, I worked with the Sacramento Kings, and I would tell you, I've heard whispers in the organization, outside the organization, in the industry, that at the time our team was the easiest sell in sports for vendors, right? And it's because, again, from Vivek Renadive, we were testing everything. We wanted to beta test anything that was to come out in the next 2 or 3 years, right? And so that really permeated throughout the organization. You know, when we came here, you know, we, to Rachel's point, you know, we are one of those teams that are now starting to begin to look at, okay, how do we make our data infrastructure dependable, right? And what we had previously was dependable for then, but, you know, I don't want to go into next year building our daily sales report off of 12 Excel files and spending an hour to do it, right? I want our team to advance and grow their careers. And so we are now, once we do get to that level where we've got a dependable data infrastructure, we can then create the organization to be a little bit more data mature and then say, okay, this now opens up our eyes to even more investments that will make us even more efficient and even better.
Well, like innovation for like innovation's sake is kind of fruitless. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of places where we're pitching vendors because it's cool or it's going to save us time. And the individual pitching that vendor is not really equipped to really understand what the full business use case is, right? Because, you know, my CEO is going to go, great, you're saving 3 hours a week. Like, okay, what is that really doing for us? What are you doing in lieu of that? What's that next step? How is it empowering someone else? And then a lot of times vendors maybe can get the sex appeal sell, but they're not really selling the business use case beyond that. And I think that's where it's often failed at CMA is like, great, that's cool. Where's the beef? And we're not just going to move because the basics matter, right? We still got to hit our X's and O's. So I haven't left sport too far behind.
Right on.
Well, I think we'll wrap it there. Thank you so much to our panelists. That was a really interesting and I think actionable conversation.